It is Friday night. A conservation group learns that Cascade Timber Company will begin clear-cutting a protected old-growth grove at dawn on Saturday. By the time a court could gather both sides in a room, the trees and the whole subject of the lawsuit would be gone. Can a federal judge stop the saws tonight without ever hearing from Cascade? Yes, but only on strict conditions and only for 14 days. That sentence is the architecture of this entire topic. A court has three tools for acting before it knows who is right, and each buys a different amount of time on a different showing. Pick the wrong tool and your answer is wrong, however good your facts are. Here is the root. First, the two ideas that run through everything: the status quo and irreparable harm. Then the temporary restraining order under Rule 65B and the preliminary injunction under Rule 65A. Then the bond under Rule 65C and the form and reach of the order under Rule 65D. Then how a preliminary injunction becomes permanent. And finally, appeals. Start with why courts do this. Litigation is slow, and in the months before final judgment, the thing the parties are fighting over can disappear. Timber gets cut. A secret gets published. A judgment over something that no longer exists is a win on paper. Provisional remedies fix that. They let a court act early, before it knows who is right, and freeze the situation so a meaningful judgment is still possible. In federal court, one rule governs the family, Rule 65. Three tools on an escalating timeline: days, the temporary restraining order, the case, the preliminary injunction, forever, the permanent injunction, after the plaintiff wins on the merits. Two ideas run through all of it. First, the status quo these remedies protect. It is not the situation when the complaint was filed. It is the last peaceable, uncontested arrangement that existed before the dispute broke out. Test that. Two neighbors share a gravel driveway for over 30 years. After a quarrel, one bolts a locked steel gate across it. She sues. Status quo: the open driveway or the gate? The open driveway. Read it the other way, and the remedy rewards whoever moved first. Second idea: irreparable harm. Injunctions are equitable, and equity will not act where money damages would fully compensate the plaintiff. It is harm money cannot adequately repair because it is impossible to value, impossible to collect, or not the kind of loss dollars can undo. The classics: a one-of-a-kind parcel of land, an old-growth grove destroyed, a secret that can never be made secret again. A plain loss of money the defendant can later pay is not irreparable. So a retailer whose wholesaler refuses to deliver standard galvanized steel bolts gets no injunction. Bolts are fungible, and the price difference is ordinary damages. But a perfume house whose departing chemist is about to publish its secret formula does. Secrecy, once lost, is gone for good. One more distinction before the tools. A prohibitory injunction orders a party not to act and preserves the status quo. A mandatory injunction orders affirmative action and changes it. Two motions, identical on every other factor. One asks a court to stop a neighbor dumping fill dirt on a lot. The other asks a court to make a contractor rebuild a demolished structure before trial. Which is harder? The rebuild. Mandatory preliminary injunctions are disfavored and held to a higher showing. Forcing a party to act before trial is a bigger intrusion. First tool: the temporary restraining order, Rule 65B. It is the true emergency instrument, and the only order in this family a court can issue without hearing from the other side. Its job is narrow: hold off an immediate irreparable harm just long enough to schedule a real, both sides hearing on a preliminary injunction. Because it can issue with the other side absent, the conditions are strict, and there are two. First, specific facts in an affidavit or a verified complaint clearly show immediate and irreparable injury before the adverse party can be heard. Sworn facts, not conclusions. Second, the attorney certifies in writing any efforts to give notice and why notice should be excused. The order itself must state the date and hour it issued, describe the injury, and say why it issued without notice. Now, the number the exam loves. An order issued without notice expires when the court says not to exceed 14 days. The court may extend it once for a like period, another 14 days, and only for good cause. Anything longer needs the adverse party's consent. Without consent, the ceiling is about 28 days. Watch that number. The former rule said 10 days, and stale study aids still say so. The current rule is 14. The short fuse has teeth. The court must set the preliminary injunction hearing at the earliest possible time. The party who obtained the order must appear and pursue the injunction, or the court must dissolve it, and the restrained party need not wait. On 2 days' notice, it may move to dissolve or modify the order. Back to Friday night. The group files a verified complaint whose sworn facts show the grove will be gone by morning. Its lawyer certifies the calls and emails she made to Cascade's counsel that evening. On those facts, a judge can stop the cutting that night, without notice, for up to 14 days. Change one fact. The harvest is 6 weeks away. Now there is ample time to give notice, so there is no emergency and no order without notice. Urgency is not a mood. It is something you swear to. Second tool. The Preliminary Injunction, Rule 65A. The workhorse. It holds the status quo through the pendency of the case, typically until final judgment or a further order, and it carries no short fuse. And here is the contrast that decides more questions than anything else in this topic. A court may issue a preliminary injunction only on notice to the adverse party. There is no ex parte preliminary injunction. Not for a strong merits showing, not for an urgent harm. Need relief tonight? Then your tool is a restraining order. To win one, the movant must carry four factors. 1. Likelihood of success on the merits. 2. Likelihood of irreparable harm without the injunction. 3. The balance of the equities tips in the movant's favor. 4. The injunction is in the public interest. Two things about that list. The movant carries the burden on every factor, and each one is necessary. Fail one, and the motion fails. And the second factor is demanding. Irreparable harm must be likely, not merely possible. The Supreme Court rejected the looser possibility standard, so a chain of maybes will not do. No government discount either. Even a federal agency must satisfy the same four factors, as the Supreme Court confirmed in 2024. Acting for the public helps on the public interest factor. It does not excuse the rest. One nuance. Notice does not always mean a live evidentiary hearing, since courts often decide on affidavits and documents. And the old sliding scale, one strong factor offsetting a weak one, is on shaky ground. Treat every factor as necessary, so run all four on our grove. Likely success. The group will probably prove the grove is legally protected. Likely irreparable harm. The cut destroys irreplaceable old growth. Balance of hardships. Its loss against a delayed harvest. Public interest. A protected forest preserved. Carry all four and the cutting stops until the case is decided. Miss one and the motion dies, however strong the rest. Take a bakery that will likely win its trademark claim. It still loses if the injunction would force a national chain into a costly recall, while the bakery's own losses from waiting are modest. Now the price of interim relief, security under Rule 65C. The court acts before it knows who is right, so the party it restrains is sometimes the party who was right all along. A court may grant interim relief only if the movant gives security in an amount the court considers proper. It covers the costs and damages of any party later found to have been wrongfully enjoined. Three things to keep. The amount is discretionary and can be substantial, nominal, or in some courts waived. In most circuits, it is also a ceiling. A startup posts $50,000. The rival it froze later proves $200,000 in lost sales and recovers up to the bond, not the loss. So, contest a low bond when it is set. Two carve-outs. The United States, its officers, and its agencies need not give security at all. And a permanent injunction, entered only after the plaintiff has actually won, requires no bond either. Next, how the order is written and whom it binds. Rule 65D. Every injunction must state the reasons it issued and state its terms specifically. It must describe the acts restrained or required in reasonable detail, not by referring to the complaint. An order saying only that the defendant is enjoined from the conduct described in the complaint does exactly what the rule forbids. On reach, the order binds only those who receive actual notice of it. The parties, their officers, agents, servants, employees, and attorneys, and other persons in active concert or participation with them. Test that too. A court enjoins a manufacturer from selling a mislabeled supplement. Its wholly owned subsidiary, whose managers hold a copy of the order, keeps shipping. An unrelated retailer, never a party and with no notice, keeps selling old stock. Who is bound? The subsidiary, active concert plus actual notice. The stranger to the case is not. A preliminary injunction is a placeholder, not the last word, and it can ripen into a permanent one two ways. First, consolidation under Rule 65A2. The court advances the trial and merges it with the hearing, so evidence already received becomes part of the trial record, and any jury trial right is preserved. Second, the ordinary course, where the hold runs through to trial. The shift is in the merits factor, and this is the difference the exam tests. A preliminary injunction rests on a prediction that the plaintiff is likely to succeed. A permanent injunction requires actual success, that the plaintiff has, in fact, won. Everything else mirrors. An irreparable injury suffered. Remedies at law, such as money damages, inadequate. A balance of hardships warranting a remedy in equity. And a public interest that would not be disserved. So winning the interim motion guarantees nothing. Back in Colombia, if the group proves at trial that the grove is protected, the hold becomes a permanent injunction. If the group loses, the preliminary injunction dissolves and Cascade may harvest. Last, appeals. Ordinarily, you wait for final judgment because the final judgment rule bars piecemeal appeals of mid-case orders. Injunctions are a statutory exception. Under 28 U.S.C. Section 1292A1, a party may appeal at once from an order, granting, refusing, continuing, modifying, or dissolving a preliminary injunction. Note, refusing. The movant who loses may appeal too. A restraining order is different. It is too brief and preliminary, so generally it cannot be appealed. But substance controls over labels. Say an order captioned a restraining order issued after a contested hearing carries no expiration date and has restrained conduct for 2 months. That is a preliminary injunction, whatever the caption says. And review is layered. The grant or denial is examined for abuse of discretion, with underlying legal rulings reviewed de novo and factual findings for clear error. A word on authorities. This episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. The exam will not ask you for case names. It hands you a fact pattern, and because this topic is unstarred, it may hand you the text of Rule 65 itself and ask you to apply it. Your authorities here are that rule and one statute, 28 U.S.C. Section 1292A1. So if you keep only three things, keep these. Rule 65B, the emergency tool, available without notice on strict conditions for 14 days. Rule 65A, notice always, four factors always. And Rule 65C, security for interim relief, never for permanent relief, and never from the United States. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Ex parte confusion. A restraining order can issue without notice if the strict conditions are met. A preliminary injunction never can. 2. The clock. 14 days. One like extension for good cause, longer only by consent. An answer choice that says 10 is quoting the former rule. 3. Appealability. A preliminary injunction is immediately appealable. A restraining order usually is not. 4. Irreparable means. Money will not do. And the harm must be likely, not merely possible. A financial loss the defendant can pay is not irreparable. 5. The merits standard. Preliminary relief needs likely success. Permanent relief needs actual success. 6. The bond. Required for a restraining order or a preliminary injunction, never for a permanent one, never from the United States. And posting a bond never guarantees the permanent injunction.
7. Form and reach. The order must describe the forbidden acts specifically, and it binds a non-party only where that person acts in concert with a party and has actual notice. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo Question Bank. A bank sues a former executive to stop him soliciting its clients in breach of a covenant. 2 weeks in, the bank moves for a preliminary injunction. It asks the court to rule immediately, on the papers, without notice to the executive, because delay lets him keep poaching. May the court grant the injunction without notice? Option 1. No, because a preliminary injunction may issue only on notice to the adverse party. Option 2. Yes, because the bank has made a strong showing that it is likely to succeed. Option 3. No, because the bank has not yet posted the security required to support the order. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 1. Rule 65A1 is categorical. A court may issue a preliminary injunction only on notice to the adverse party. There is no ex parte preliminary injunction, however strong the case or urgent the need. Option 2 is tempting because likely success is a real factor. But no factor excuses the mandatory notice rule. If the bank truly needs relief without notice, its tool is a restraining order under Rule 65B. Option 3 states a real requirement, security under Rule 65C, but misidentifies the defect. Even a fully bonded motion cannot yield a preliminary injunction without notice. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. Rule 65 gives you 3 tools, and only the restraining order can issue without notice on sworn specific facts plus counsel's certification for at most 14 days. 2. A preliminary injunction always requires notice, and all 4 factors carried by the movant. 3. Irreparable means money will not do, and the harm must be likely, not merely possible. 4. Security backs interim relief, never permanent relief, and is never required of the United States. 5. Preliminary rests on likely success. Permanent requires actual success. So, when a fact pattern shows a plaintiff who needs the court to act now, ask 3 questions in order. How fast? And with what notice? Do all 4 factors line up? And what happens next? A hearing? A trial? A permanent injunction? That is how a Friday night phone call ends with a grove still standing at dawn. Whether it stands after trial is a different question. Next time, pleadings and Rule 11. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.